Warning, the following podcast contains words. If you get offended by them, that's kind of on you.
This week's episode of The Scathing Atheist is brought to you by Godawful Movies Live in Washington, D.C. on August 14th. Tickets available at godawfulmovieslive.com. And now, The Scathing Atheist.
It's Thursday.
It's August 6th.
And it's Corporate Baby Name Day.
You think money grows on trees, little Saudi Aramco? No, no, it doesn't.
I'm No Illusions.
I'm Eli Bosnick.
I'm Ethan Wright. From Ivanka, Trump's New Jersey, Ann Arbor, Michigan, away across Georgia, this is The Scathing Atheist.
On this week's episode, Trump's religious committee tries to DEI so they don't DIE.
A preacher gets kicked off a flight after a complaint from a baby with kidney stones.
And we'll crack open a book that can't be trusted around the couch long enough to sit on the coffee table.
First, the diatribe.
I have spent so goddamn much time arguing with apologists on the internet that I almost forgot what it was like to argue with somebody who was earnest. Because you know how internet arguments are, or maybe you're mentally healthy in a way that I can only dream of and don't feel the need to chime in on the comment section under Fox News articles. But when you argue with people on social media, generally speaking, nobody's out to change their mind. And they've got a zinger in their holster, and if they can just get you to answer these three questions from their flowchart correctly, they get to whip it out and pretend they thought of it themselves. Or they're bots. Usually they're bots. But the point is that it's all performative. They have to ask you a question to start because that's how their flowchart works, but they don't give a fuck how you answer it. It's not going to change their response. Or if it is, it's just going to kick them to the other side of the flowchart. They're not going to think about what you said, right? It's either that or else they're just parroting some bullshit the right-wing echo chamber armed them with, and they only realized it made no sense when they tried to deploy it in a real-world scenario, at which point, rather than changing their minds, they simply abandon it and go back for another talking point. Or they abandon that conversation and use the same talking point on a dumber opponent. But once in a while, you actually come across people who are earnestly engaging in a conversation. And that's like coming across a working payphone. You're like, no way, I remember those. And since the great algorithm has been steering me towards these atheist versus Christian debate groups a lot lately, I'm seeing this more and more. And by that, I mean, I've seen it like five or six times in the last 6 months, but that's a lot by Facebook standards. And here's the interesting commonality that I found in all of these conversations. The Christian who is earnestly presenting their worldview for consideration almost invariably goes into the conversation with the assumption that atheism and Christianity are more or less tied in terms of supporting evidence. And as silly as this always strikes me, I have to remind myself that atheism is unique in this regard, right? Because of all the thousands of other attempts to answer the God question, they're all tied in terms of evidence. Right? You and I know that they're tied at zero because we know how evidence works. But let's be honest, religious people mostly don't, kind of a prerequisite. So what they use in lieu of evidence is stuff like, when I pray, I feel a presence. Or when my cousin turned to God, she got off meth. And if you're arguing with a Muslim or a Hindu or a Christian of another denomination or whatever, they're justifying their faith with the same sort of shit. You have a couple arguments like that, and it's probably really easy to conclude that all the various religious beliefs are tied. And picking a religion is a higher stakes version of picking your favorite baseball team. And if you're choosing a religious affiliation based on the benefits, you couldn't do much worse than atheism, right? I mean, both in terms of imaginary benefits and real ones. I mean, I certainly don't want to start ranking the oppressions, and I'll freely admit that in most of the meaningful ways, most of the other non-Christian faiths have it worse than atheists when it comes to prejudice, at least in the United States. But in most of the country, atheism doesn't even give you a place to belong. Plus, you don't get a heaven. You don't get to watch the people who wronged you burn in hell after you die. You don't get magical intervention when you're sick. You have to find your own car keys and parking spaces. It's all downside. Unless, of course, you can tap into that sweet vein of atheist podcast money. But for most atheists, there's no upside. That's the problem with atheism. It fucks up the whole concept of the religious debate by being right. I mean, the unspoken rules of the religious debate is that everybody has to be equally wrong so that nobody's psychological security blanket gets frayed along the way. And then along come a bunch of fucking atheists screwing it all up by pointing out all the known science. But I have to remind myself that not everybody knows that going in. There are still two types of religious debaters in the world. Those who don't know the facts and those who don't accept the facts. You deal with the latter long enough and it's easy to forget the former even exists. Joining me for headlines tonight are the boots and pants of this podcast, Heath Enright and Eli Bosnick. Fellas, are you ready to drop the beat?
Okay, I am, but Geico is not taking Eli's calls anymore.
They heard I have a Nissan.
That's not why.
In our lead story tonight, we've probably spent about as much time on this show talking about Trump's Religious Liberty Commission as the commission has spent committing. And given that it's a purely symbolic, powerless puppet parade with the sole purpose of rubber stamping a preordained conclusion, that might seem like too much, but it's such a perfect microcosm of both the Trump administration's ineptitude and the degree to which that aptitude never fucking matters that I almost can't help myself. So we're at it once again to let you know that a lawsuit against the commission for failing to meet the minimum legal diversity requirements failed because the judge was a Trump appointee and they're not really doing laws anymore.
Yeah. Plus, Sam Alito announced the end of racism in April. So,
yeah, well, there's that.
Was it something along those lines?
A lot like that.
Come on. They had a Jew. They had a lady who hated Jews. It's all the religions. We got them. We covered them.
Yeah, that's the full spectrum.
Diversity.
Yeah, right. So we first talked about this lawsuit back on episode 675 because it turned out that even bullshit symbolic advisory panels filled with presidential cronies still have regulations. Specifically, there's a 1972 law called the Federal Advisory Committee Act, or FACA. And it exists keep a president. Well, they make it easy on us sometimes, right? But it exists to basically keep a president from creating a bullshit symbolic advisory panel and filling it with his fucking cronies. It has strict requirements for both transparency and diversity, both of which have been something of a kryptonite for the Trump administration.
Okay, I'm sorry. Knowing things and people who know different things. Can you hear yourself right now?
Right? Yes. Crazy. It's crazy.
I am lost.
So when the panel's members were announced, and it ended up being 13 conservative Christians and a far-right Orthodox Jew, a group of actual religious freedom watchdogs sued over FACA violations. And not just based on their lack of diversity, they're also supposed to, like, publish minutes and transcripts of their meetings and announce meeting agendas and witnesses in advance and publish drafts of their report before the fucking report comes out, none of which they actually did. In terms of transparency, all they ever did was post videos of their meetings on YouTube after the fact, at least one of which was edited.
Okay. I mean, I see you gave yourselves costumes from the Village People with AI. That's diversity. That's nothing.
My background's a nice room. You see, it's a nice, room.
No, that's
so
cool.
To be clear here, there is almost no imaginable way in which this commission could have more grossly violated both the letter and spirit of the Federal Advisory Committee Act. Everything about the law was clearly designed to keep future presidents from doing exactly what this commission was doing, which would have been a real problem for the Trump administration if they were maintaining even a fucking pretense that laws applied to them. But they're not. So the Trump-appointed judge that this case was assigned to tossed it out entirely on the grounds that, while not religiously diverse, the panel members had other forms of diversity.
So stupid.
Eye color and fucking shoe size.
This is a panel of beautiful, unique, all white snowflakes.
Yeah, right. And
lots
right.
of nuance about, I don't know, pineapple on pizza, for example. Lots of diversity.
Whether hot dog is a sandwich. Yeah.
You should hear these guys go at it over Buffy season 6 and 7. There's a lot of Team Spike. There's a lot. I don't know why I'm doing the Trump voice
seven
for him.
Yep.
That guy's right.
Now, of course, the dismissal completely, no fucking diversity on this panel whatsoever.
Just like Buffy.
Now, of course, the dismissal completely ignored all the transparency violations and the meaning of the word diversity. But the coalition that was challenging the committee doesn't appear to have any plans to appeal, partly because the legal system is a farce and there's no chance in hell that Trump will ever be held accountable by it. And partly because the report is already out. So there's nothing the courts could really do to remedy their issue now anyway. It's not like they can order them to have pre-published their meeting agendas. And to their credit, the group that did this lawsuit also did a lot of good work highlighting the extent to which the panel was bullshit, which will probably come in handy for some future Edward Gibbon working out his fall volumes or something.
You could burn it for heat after the times.
Yeah.
And
What's in Urich? High crimes and misdemeanors news. You see what I did?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Got it.
Imagine, if you will.
I really enjoyed it. I did enjoy it.
Thank you. That's awesome. Thank you. Imagine, if you will, that on August 28th of 1963, as Martin Luther King Jr. had gotten up to give his now iconic I Have a Dream speech, he said instead, "Oh my God, you guys, they arrested us for protesting. Look, there are a lot of you here. I need everyone to chip in $11 each because I'm not paying that ticket. They arrested us. Arrested us." That, my friends, has been the journey of Christian crusader and name you wish you could forget, Kim Davis, who this week is being sued for fraud because she is still trying to get out of her divinely commanded legal fees.
Okay. So, Eli, I know you're doing a satirical bit about MLK there, but as usual, satire's corpse is ready to jump out of the grave and flick you in the fucking eyeball. This is real. Kim Davis was held in contempt mm-hmm. of court in 2015.
Yes.
And she went to jail for 5 nights. I'm sure it was really tough. And this is the real part. Her defense team literally compared her righteous refusal to sign a marriage license to MLK's letter from Birmingham jail. They really,
they did that.
Okay, you guys are being really judgy. Look, she's willing to suffer for her beliefs, but she's way more willing not to suffer from them. Okay, the term is martyr, not martist.
Exactly, yes, right. So first off, a big thanks to Hemet Mehta over at the Friendly Atheist blog for bringing this latest bit of karmic retribution to our attention. You can check out his stuff at friendlyatheist.com or send him a pillow filled with your hair. He loves that.
It's only a matter of time before the restraining order thing stops being a joke, man.
Self-fulfilling prophecy. It's a nice thing. Right. So for those of you who don't remember, Kim Davis was a thrice divorced Rowan County, Kentucky clerk who defied the law in 2015 when she refused to sign a marriage license for a same-sex couple. She lost that lawsuit about the case and ended up owing the couple $100,000 in damages and then another $260,000 in legal fees, which shouldn't have been a problem. The minute Christian idiots heard someone was standing up for bigotry, the money poured mm-hmm. in from all over the country.
And the idea of $250,000 in homophobic GoFundMe payments all going to the lap of a couple that was gay and having their rights trampled on them, that is the closest we get to poetic justice in the real world,
Sure was. Well, apparently funny. She can give send go fuck herself. Because, as I said at the top, we discovered this week that it wasn't quite enough to cover her bills. So she's been hiding her inheritance in hopes of not having to pay up. According to the Lexington Herald leader, Kim Davis and her brother, Daryl Rayburn Bailey Jr.
Fuck off. Come on.
I just keep saying hick names. It gets more hicky. Junior pig feet racism. So apparently they transferred a Moorhead home in her mother's estate to Bailey Jr. and his wife and Kim Davis's husband, Joe Davis, effectively writing her off the deed. Then in May of 2025, Kim Davis and her brother transferred a 50-acre farm parcel and a separate 3-bedroom home to a trust for which her husband and son are beneficiaries.
Okay, so I've been to Moorhead, Kentucky. It's the home of the pretty good Wendy's off I-64 if you're driving from Cattlesburg to Salt Lick. Here's the thing. I wouldn't call anything in Moorhead an estate. If it doesn't include the Wendy's, it's not an estate in Moorhead. The pretty good Wendy's I would call an estate. But okay, it's some bullshit either way. But just to clarify.
So, okay. One way or the other, though, I want the reality show now where that couple that she denied the license to moves to her old family estate and learns to farm.
Yes.
$1 million idea.
But it actually gets worse. So this might shock you to your very core, but Miss Davis is actually not the first person to try to get out of legal debt by giving stuff to her family. So in 2025, she swore under oath that she had not transferred property over $2,000 in the previous 5 years. So not only will those transfers be legally reversed, but she could face criminal charges for them.
Just like the prophet Elijah being hunted by Ahab and Jezebel. It's tough. Hopefully her legal team does a good rendition of Swing Low, Sweet Chariot in her defense at that trial.
I'm sure they will.
I'm sure they will.
Trouble.
Now, you might be wondering what Kim's lawyers think about this. Well, as someone whose lawyers regularly wake up screaming, "Eli, don't say anything," in the middle of the night, I imagine they would be disappointed.
Can confirm what Eli just said, by the way.
Well, luckily, Matt Staver of Liberty Counsel has no such worries. According to Matt, real quote, "She did not lie. They asked a specific question and she answered it exactly, truthfully, the way they had asked. The attorneys asked Davis to identify each property you own or in which you have an interest, not the past tense owned."
Okay, she was talking about her present tense ownership during the past 5 years.
Yes,
thanks for clearing that up, Matt. Got it.
Right, yeah, exactly.
Hey, do you want a tea? Do you want I have an extra tea, Matt. Do you want it?
Oh, that's God, the gay one.
Yeah, this is so close to yes, Your Honor, but she had her fingers crossed. I mean, honestly, seriously, it's right next to this.
It's like a little dumber than that one. Right. So we're going to see how this turns out. I'm going to be honest. I'm still a little worried that we're going to get a gay marriage ruling from the Supreme Court that sort of pulls Davis out of this pickle like the Duke boy she shares a flag affinity with. But until that happens, we'll let her and her lawyers rely on the same legal strategies Heath uses to play board games.
Next up in headlines, in epic failure news, a bunch of conservative chuds are pretending they read Homer's poem and they decided to pick a fight with Christopher Nolan's The Odyssey for being too woke, and they are losing super hard. Based on the box office numbers I saw, the lesson is go woke, make $1 billion and counting.
Yep.
Yeah.
Elon Musk, for his part, responded by promising an AI-generated remake with fake white people in order to correct the historical inaccuracies of the story about gods and sorcery and sea monsters. We talked about it on the last episode of The Skeptocrat. Check it out if you're interested. But for today, we're going to talk about the responses that came from a more religious angle. That means we're going to be hearing some cinematic and literary analysis from Ross Douthat, as well as Michael Knowles and Ben Shapiro of The Daily Wire, if The Daily Wire still exists after the edit. We'll see how it goes.
Yeah. Curse those liberal cucks and their foundational Western texts.
It's such a losing argument. And by the way, I love for Ross that that's the company he finds himself in. Right. A man who aspires to be a real intellectual, just like Ezra, just perfectly at home on a list with Michael Knowles and Ben Shapiro. Yeah.
Also, just bigger context. The whole story, it's stolen from the Epic of Gilgamesh, which is from like Mesopotamia. So it wouldn't be white people at all. Just for the record. That's where a lot of that came from. OK,
well, now we're fighting.
I'll start with Ross Douthat. You might remember him from being the token conservative Christian in the New York Times opinion section, or vastly more importantly, from our God Awful Books segment that we did. We just finished his book. Or maybe you went to that bridge where he does the fucking riddles. He's also the newest member. Ross Douthat is the newest member of Barry Weiss's team at 60 Minutes.
Yeah.
He's going to be a correspondent for 60 Minutes. Well, here's how he starts his op-ed from last week. Quote, "Christopher Nolan's The Odyssey is the blockbuster that launched a million takes. The interpretations crowd, my social media feed, like Agamemnon's assembled ships at Aulis, right? They keen in my ears like the sirens' seductive voices."
We get it.
Okay. Look. And seriously, that's what he wrote. He like realizes
these are the quote. Yeah, he's
the
doing
worst.
A voice, but these
and
are
he's like,
the
okay.
exact words.
Okay, look. I'm just saying, people have a lot of opinions about the biggest movie of the year.
Hey, Ross, are you sitting backwards in your chair as you type this? You're breathing really hard, man. We can hear you.
So I know this is that dumb thing to chase, but he says there are a million of them in one sentence. And then in the next sentence, he compares them to a thing that very famously there were 1,000 of. Right. And that would be dumb enough, even if the phrase he'd bastardized in the first sentence wasn't about the thing there were a thousand of only being a thousand. Jesus, Ross, pretentious better, you dumbass. You're with 60 Minutes now.
Yeah, you got it. You were pretty good on pretench, but like you got to ramp it, man, for Barry Weiss.
Yeah.
Come on. So one of the big critiques from Ross is that Nolan removed too much sweet religion stuff, which led to a bland version of the story in the movie. According to Ross, quote, "Gone are the sex and sensuality, the warring deities, the hero's outsized ego and charisma."
I can barely jerk off to this one.
"In their place is a story that's very American, with tropes familiar from war movies and westerns, dialogue that belongs in a contemporary YA novel, and a moralism that's at once extremely didactic and extremely general."
Jesus fucking Christ. They let Tom Holland say dad once in the fucking movie and half the planet loses their goddamn mind.
Oh, my fucking God. Yeah, Ross's critique is that he made it relevant to modern audiences, right? Like, that's genuinely what he's saying. And I can see why a Catholic apologist would take issue with that, but holy sure. fucking shit, it clearly works.
All right, so from there, Ross explains that Christopher Nolan left several big themes of the story up for interpretation and capable of being claimed by the full range of the ideological spectrum. And then Ross, he realizes what he just said, and he begrudgingly admits that good art might do that.
Shit, you know, that's just think. Art, fuck.
While also, of course, remembering his latest book about how all the religions are pretty cool. No, they're not. Be Christian. And then he gives us three different interpretations of the Nolan movie. One was a liberal interpretation, but the other two were a Catholic warning narrative and, strangely, a pro-Brexit theme.
Really?
Quote, "I can give you a plausible reading of the movie in which its portrayal of the Bronze Age collapse is an allegory for the crisis of the liberal international order. Nolan, the multicultural liberal, lamenting the cruelty of Trumpism. Or a reading in which Odysseus's guilt over the sack of Troy is fundamentally Christian, and the monsters belong to a world that awaits us if Christianity fails. Nolan, the lapsed Catholic, unable to shake his religious upbringing. Or, for that matter, a populist reading in which Odysseus returns home from a hubristic Middle Eastern war to find guests abusing his hospitality who need to be cleared out. Nolan, the British Burkean, offering an allegory of a Europe unable to cope with immigration."
Jesus. End exact quote. Christ.
And I can interpret it to be about the dangers of ziplining, Ross. Lying about what a movie is rules. I agree. Right? That's, yeah.
Yeah.
I can be wrong about any piece of art.
Yeah.
Kind of an X-Man that way.
That's why art is great. And that brings us to the Chapter 10.9 Daily Wire. Michael Knowles is one of their talking heads, and he saw the movie in order to make his anti-woke takedown video. But then the movie was pretty great, and he was fucking furious because it ruined his thing. So all he had left was trying to claim the movie for the Christian right. Like,
I've
Nolan
seen a lot of
this, doing
yeah.
this on purpose. Yeah. So Knowles tried this with two different angles. One was transphobic, not surprisingly, regarding Elliot Page as the character Sinon. Knowles argues that Christopher Nolan is actually a secret conservative, if you think about it, and choosing Page was a subtle reference to Sinon's depiction as a fraudster in the Aeneid and the Divine Comedy, where that character actually appears historically. The other way we know that Nolan is a secret conservative is because The Dark Knight was really a story about how George W. Bush was a great president and the war on terror was a super good idea.
Was it?
Yeah, remember at the end where Morgan Freeman gives the super surveillance computer to Flock and he's like, I think you guys are going to do great stuff with this. This is fantastic.
Well, and you know how Memento is really a tribute to how quickly Republicans can forget that they were outraged about high gas prices, government interference with private industry, and the Epstein files?
Yeah. No, it's because of the disease.
And their wife took too much insulin. Yeah, exactly.
Okay, so
died on purpose.
Did you guys hear that? Did you hear that gravelly scratching sound just now. Well, that means it's time to talk about Ben Shapiro. He also
really before loved. Anna can make a Ben Shapiro jingle. How dare you, sir?
Make it happen. So Ben also loved the movie and went home furious. And he had to tell his dwindling audience to relax about the black lady as Helen of Troy because it's making the squad look stupid. So, you know, good save. Close one. Got him, Ben. And
almost there, silly.
From there, he tried to claim the movie as a Christian allegory about the golden rule. According to Benny Towels, quote, "It's a Christian allegory because the whole thing is a biblical take. Christopher Nolan establishes at the beginning of the film something that he calls Zeus's rule."
Sounds pretty so, Christian.
Yeah, right. "Treat others as you would be treated because you don't know who is a god in disguise." Now, you may notice that "treat others as you would be treated" is the golden rule. The golden rule comes from the New Testament. Okay? Is that okay with you guys?
It's okay with me.
I mean, he's lying.
No, so he's not, actually. I'll get to it.
And usually it finishes, "because God made man in his image." Nolan takes that and flips it and says, "because any person could be a god." Okay? It is okay. "This is not something that the Greeks cared about," end quote.
It's a good thing that the source material that specifically talks about Zeus's law isn't 1,000 years older than your fucking Bible, or you'd look really stupid right now. Yeah.
I know it's a Jewish thing, but
Jesus Christ stole it from 8,000 years before Christ. Yep.
That's how he got it. Yeah. I know it's a Jewish thing, but I like that Ben and I have the same verbal tick when we're lying. Right?
Yeah, okay.
You got it? Uh-huh. Uh-huh.
Agree with me? Nod. Okay. Nod.
Yeah. Yes.
So, yeah, there you have it. Christopher Nolan is secretly incepting us with conservative Christianity. He cast Elliot Page and paid him $1.5 million for 5 minutes of screen time as a smokescreen for subliminal anti-trans propaganda. And the golden rule, it's kind of like a secret shopper scenario when you're bartending at TGI Fridays. You got to be nice to everyone just in case one of the patrons is actually a Greek god in disguise asking for a strong island, and you have to not be a dick about that horrible, horrible thing they just said.
Yeah. Mm. Everyone's ordering an angel shot around Zeus.
Yeah, right. And in keeping the duh in Florida news, some pretty fucked up shit has to happen before I come down on the side of government funds going to private Catholic schools. I'm a firm believer that no taxpayer money should go to religious schools whatsoever. I also think that diplomas from religious schools should have big asterisks on them, and degrees from religious colleges should be legally required to make slide whistle noises when you unroll them.
You should run on that and nothing else.
Nothing else. Favorite.
Right?
Got my vote.
So all that being said,
PhD.
I don't think that taxpayer money should be selectively and vindictively yanked from religious schools for being too damn vaccinated. And that's what's happening in Florida, or at least that's what they're threatening. So damn it if I'm not going to have to side with the fucking Catholic schools for a few minutes.
Yeah, when a bank robber is, I don't know, like jaywalking later that day and gets shot in the face by a cop, and the cop takes all the cash in his pocket, like, yeah, technically, I'm on Team Bank Robber now. So,
yeah,
like,
right.
That's
yeah.
What you guys
that's
have
where
done.
We're at. Yeah. So this comes to us from the Attorney General of America's Flaccid Penis, James Uthmeyer. And if you feel like you don't have enough context about the guy to hate him sufficiently, I want to add that he basically aspires to be Ken Paxton. That's his goal.
Center of his vision board. Right.
Yeah, exactly. And he's all mad because Catholic schools in Florida don't accept religious exemptions to vaccine requirements, which, to their credit, it's their religion, right? Their religion doesn't have any restrictions about getting vaccines. And since you have to be their religion to go there, there's no reason why they would.
Yeah. If the Bible had anything at all about RNA or stem cells, I'd be Christian already.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Maybe not like for spite, I wouldn't be. But
well,
like,
right,
I know
sucks.
I was
yeah.
wrong. For sure, yeah. At that point.
Yeah. Even if we pretend he meant what he said, and to be clear, he does not, this would be like being mad because a Baptist school doesn't have a policy against bringing TRAFE into the building. Like, it's not, it's not your thing. But, it's, okay. their, it's your thing.
But Uthmeyer, himself a Catholic, he disagreed. He sent a letter to the Florida Conference of Catholic Bishops decrying their decision not to accept religious vaccine exemptions for the new school year. The letter, Son of Man, explained in part, quote, "As a Catholic, I am confident that the teachings of the Catholic Church do not require schools to compel students to take vaccines derived from the tissues of aborted children against the sincerely held religious objections of their parents," end quote. Which is almost as wrong theologically as it is scientifically. I mean, the whole fucking point of Catholicism is that it's dictated from on high. Right? The whole, we each get to interpret it for ourselves shit, that's literally the Reformation. And the Vatican has specifically stated that it is Catholic kosher to, quote, receive COVID-19 vaccines that have used cell lines from aborted fetuses in their research and production process, end quote.
Yeah, it's a magical HIPAA violation to even ask the religion about their stuff. Or even consider whether or not their stuff is dumb. I just said the official position of Antonin Scalia. You're being too Republican for Antonin Scalia right now.
Yeah. I love that this guy's just like, he finds this out and he's sitting at home. He's like, modern evangelicism has all the fucking new bigotry, Troy's stupid Pope and his wokeness from 1950.
Yeah. Right.
Doesn't
right.
believe in all the stupid shit I believe.
So here we've got a case where the state is using its financial leverage to dictate to a religious institution how it should practice its religion. And those crickets that you hear in the background are all the conservative Christian chicken littles that have been screaming about Democrats weaponizing the government against Christians for the last fucking decade. It's almost as if giving taxpayer money to religious schools was a bad idea for both secular taxpayers and religious schools. If only literally every vocal advocate of church-state separation had warned them.
Right?
What are you going to do?
And finally tonight, in Fly the Unfriendly Skies news, as I was preparing for our audiovisual program last week, I noticed that we got quite a few emails about self-proclaimed sky evangelist Whitney Lynn, who went viral for bothering people on a plane about Jesus last week. And I'll admit, I was hesitant to talk about that story because, first of all, about once a year, a person with borderline personality disorder goes viral for doing this. So I kind of felt like everything I want to say has been said. But secondly, she's lame. Don't do that. I hope she gets eyeball cancer. So today, I'm going to make an exception because I'm pleased to announce that Whitney was kicked off Alaska Airlines this week for her shenanigans. And I have a feeling she's going to be calling herself the train evangelist sometime real soon.
Also, I hope you get eyeball cancer. I feel like we can also say it as many times as we want.
Yeah, we are allowed to.
I do.
Yeah. And since those stories started cropping up in the news, I have to admit, I've thought a lot about what I would do if I wound up on a plane with one of those people. And I end up consoling myself with stuff like, well, you know, being on the terrorist watch list would like actually look pretty cool in my historical reputation.
Yeah.
Right.
We all would overdo it. We would all of us know in our hearts, we would really love to get up and give like a soliloquy, but we'd all be like, fuck your face.
Yes, exactly. Exactly. And we'd all be like, hey, and guys, we're going to have to do live shows. I can drive
yeah,
to.
Yeah. We'd have to go to jail for a minute. Yeah. It would be real.
Also, I think it'd be more than a minute. Like, within 50 miles, it's an ankle monitor, so. Yeah.
Right. So, first off, big thanks to Lloyd for being the first to send us this story to scathingnews@gmail.com. Lloyd, as thanks for sending us atheist news to scathingnews@gmail.com. Next time we are on a plane together, Heath has to get up and give a short, passionate speech about how awesome you are.
Passionate?
And encourage people to check us out on YouTube, as well as TikTok, Instagram, and Facebook. scathingnews@gmail.com.
Okay, here's the thing. Laura actually beat Lloyd by 25 minutes, so I'm really sorry about this, Lloyd, but that prize is voided because of what I it's a 25-minute thing. Laura gets Eli's airplane snacks. That's official.
Okay, Eli's airplane snacks are such a fuck you of a prize, okay? The only prize here is Eli not having them, and that's a prize for Heath more than Laura, I think. I'm just saying.
Yeah, honestly, you take my tapas box away at this point. I think it's the only thing holding me on. I think we're all going down together without that tapas. Right. So it appears that Whitney was up to her usual shenanigans on Thursday this week when a flight attendant asked her to get her stuff and step off the plane because the crew didn't feel safe with her. And it's worth pointing out that that's an extremely reasonable position, right? A lot of people scream about Jesus during their psychotic episodes, and it's very hard to tell the difference between them and someone who wants attention on the internet.
You could argue they're in the same category, right?
One might. And even if you assume that she's a totally sane person who's just the fucking worst, the crew might need to make a safety announcement on the airplane during her little Jesus speech. And taking time for her to stop her sermon to do that is quite literally unsafe.
Yeah, right. And also, I might be on the plane somewhere, in which case nobody between me and her can really be said to be safe at all.
Exactly. Think of the innocent bystanders. So
it's like a Tasmanian devil scenario, right?
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. So like all normal people doing a totally chill thing, Whitney immediately starts recording herself and posted a 7-part Instagram story where she
super chill
yells some more. And then in response to being asked to leave the plane because she's making people feel unsafe, the first thing she says is, "Do I have guns?" Which, side note, screaming the words guns is not a great way to convince the people around you that you aren't a threat.
Hey, we just need a verbal yes or no, Whitney. But okay, I do love the idea that an air marshal tricked her with like, psychopath says what? Psychopath says guns? Huh?
Yeah,
and then
right.
She yelled guns. Guns. Like, ah, you said guns. That's like, bomb. Yeah, we gotta take it.
So then later in the airport, she tries to convince the airport police that the flight attendant kicked her off because he was gay. And then she tries to convert them. And then finally, she tries to get the Orlando airport to rise up in support of her.
Yes.
By announcing that she's been kicked off the plane for being Christian.
Okay. I loved this video so much. She starts yelling like, "I got kicked off this plane for spreading the word of Jesus." And nobody in the entire fucking terminal gives a fuck about what she's yelling about. She's pointing her phone in every direction, looking for the attention of one person. Nothing. Nobody. Everybody focuses harder on their little screen that they have so they don't have to interact with her. And then she tries to start another rant. And then the fucking American hero behind one of the counters immediately jumps in on the PA and talks over her really loud.
Yeah.
And she has to give up. It's beautiful. They might as well have a blender on the PA like Lucille Bluth. I loved it.
Now, in the videos, Whitney does receive some paperwork to rebook her flight, but looks like she might have a little difficulty with that because she received an email from the airline following the incident, letting her know that they have placed her ability to travel on Alaska, Hawaiian, and Horizon Air on hold while they investigate.
Oh.
Yeah. Okay. And here's my favorite part. The airline gave her an e-credit, but also immediately banned her from all their flights and all their affiliate flights. Just lovely work by the airline.
This is such a weird fucking week. They've got me now rooting for airlines fucking their customers out of their money, right? It's exactly. Such a weird week.
Strange bedfellows. And look, I don't want to get your hopes up too far on this. This is the kind of thing that's going to cause a big stir with Christian assholes, and airlines don't want trouble, so they might reverse their decision. But as a person who travels frequently and has, in fact, had to reschedule a flight out of Orlando Airport, I know just how much pain Whitney put herself through with her shenanigans. So no matter what happens, no matter what ends up happening, we're always going to have that.
At least that. And quick, before some Christian asshole gets me rooting for the TSA and flock cameras, we're going to wrap the headlines for the night. Heath, Eli, thanks as always.
Jumanji.
And when we come back, we'll be very disappointed to learn that the communion in the title of Vance's book has nothing to do with his relationship to the couch. Back on episode 10 of this program, Heath and I started picking our way through the Bible on air, and like so many of the decisions I made back when I thought this podcasting thing was just going to be a phase, it perpetually haunts me in a segment we now call
We have such a good book.
Oh, do we though? Do we really?
Do we?
So Last time around, we wrapped up on Ross Douthat's mealy-mouthed and failed effort to convince us that religion isn't stupid. And somehow, we're moving down from there this week by moving on to a book by no lesser sapient mold spore than James Donald Boland, who rejected almost every part of that name and now goes by J.D. Vance.
I genuinely didn't know. I thought it was Jance Dance. I actually thought it was Jance.
Yeah,
should Dancifer from Vancifer?
In my head and my heart, that's what it was.
It was James Dethesda Vance. Yeah. So he wrote a book about how religion isn't stupid also. And his is called Communion, Finding My Way Back to Faith. Now, Heath, you are very excited. Mm-hmm. You, in fact, chose this book for us.
I said indeed.
Why?
Well, okay, so based on what we know about Jance Dance Vance, it was time for, I'm going to call it a divine intervention.
Right? Boo.
Fuck and you, Eli, Boo. That was amazing. That's amazing.
Pretty fucking good. That was pretty fucking good. And Eli, you fought hard to keep us from doing this one. So my question for you is, why didn't you fight harder, though?
What can I say, Noah? I'm couching my expectations.
Boo! Boo!
Okay, boo. So that's really... That's
I booed because yours was better than mine, boo. And I was jealous.
Yeah, right. No, clearly.
It was a boo of jealousy.
Doesn't even make sense, boo.
It doesn't.
And audience, you're damn right. This is going to be wall-to-wall couch fucking jokes for the rest of the year. It's what the people demand.
That's all we got.
Now, the original plan for this week was to go through the intro in the first chapter in this segment, but the four-page intro was so thick with bullshit that I wrote to the guys. I was like, we have to scale back our ambitions a bit and really dig into this
We're
shit.
We're going to go like a paragraph at a time.
Yeah, really.
Each episode.
Really. So, okay. So we start with a dedication, and it's dedicated to some heathen lady, so I'm not sure how serious his conversion to religion can be.
Poor Usha, my muse, my rock, my love seat. Yeah. Because he fucked a couch.
So then we get introduction, true witness. And I got to admit, when I first saw the page count, I was like, okay, well, this one will fill up. You know, we'll spend 12 months on this. But then I saw the font size and I'm like, oh, this is for those who like big fonts and they cannot lie. Gotcha.
Yeah. Gotcha. When senility is your target demographic, everything is heading one in markdown. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, right. Yeah, exactly. And also, okay, I shit you not, he is two sentences into his book before his kids hate him.
They do. And then, genuinely, very next sentence, bitterly.
Yes!
They hate what he's making them do bitterly.
He takes his kids to church every week, and they fucking hate it.
Yeah, so, okay, J.D. Vance thinks they hate going to church because they're little kids, which, okay, that might be true, but also, they definitely hate him, the person.
Yeah. Like,
for sure. Little kids and dogs, they can just sense it when people are evil. Priests, fascists, dads, whatever. Like, I guarantee the kids do that, like, that recoil, you know, like Usha did when JD's hand got too close. Sure.
Yeah. I just love that he's decided to begin his grand story of conversion with three pages on how literally everyone in his life hates him. Like, that's his warm-up.
Yeah, maybe start with like an intro by a warm-up comic next
time. Yeah. Really?
I bet Chappelle would do it.
Yeah, Rob Schneider's available for sure.
Yeah, I feel like at this point, though, he starts showing off that he knows his kids' names, right? It feels like he's name-dropping them.
Okay, these kids are going to be delightful when they're old enough to write a memoir. I'm really looking forward to that. The only charming moment on the entire first page is the youngest kid, I think, Mirabelle, being like, we can't go to church yet. I'm finishing my fucking 11sies. Get off me.
Right? Yeah, he's talking about how hard it is to get him to church. And he's like, as in all things, my wife actually does all the work.
Sometimes I'm the lazy boy. You got to mix it up, right?
He goes, you know, sometimes I enter church as awkwardly as I order donuts. And I'm like, why keep... Sometimes people stare at me like my fly is down in the opening paragraph of your own fucking book, man.
Yeah, honestly, J.D. Vance not knowing you can be less hateable explains so much.
Okay, we're still in the first paragraph.
We are.
And he's showing up late to church and holding up the mass for everyone. The Secret Service, they're clearly like interrupting the sermon and doing like dive rolls and running OPSEC sweeps, being like, Bobcat is clear to enter, before JD finally walks in. That's his real name, by the way. He's Bobcat in the Secret Service.
Oh, is he?
nickname lingo.
Nonsense.
What name do you think they gave him before he did a little huff and they made
Right.
It had couch.
I have to point out, I had 8 notes on the first paragraph of this book. 8 notes, 9 if you count this one.
You tied the paragraph in sentences.
So he talks all this about how miserable it is and how everybody hates every moment of it. And then he says, quote, still, this is one of my favorite family rituals, end quote.
Oh my God, we hate you so much.
It's almost, he's almost saying, like, my kids hate the other shit we do together even more, actually. And then he's talking about the parts that he likes, and he's like, I like it when my little kid gives me a cushion to bend over, and I'm like,
come on.
Do you know about the couch fucking jokes, man? Come on, don't make it that easy.
Yeah, why are these two stuck together? What is it? It's crunchy.
He says, quote, an uncomfortable reality for any devout Christian is that so many people raised in the faith later fall away from it, end quote. And I'm like, yeah, man, seeing that most people outsmart the worldview you haven't outsmarted must be rough.
Well, you know how a lot of people go to college and they stop believing in gravity, but you know that gravity's real. It's like that very real experience that lots of people have.
You're going to become like atheist podcasters and write memoirs. Fuck. All right. Ask Todd Blanche about NDAs for kids. Okay.
Yeah, so we got kind of his statement of purpose. He's going to tell us how he fought his way out of atheism back to ignorance. So, see, Vance once didn't consider himself a Christian, but then he decided to go into politics.
Yeah. He's going to spend the next few pages accidentally explaining how the path to Christ is very narrow and paved with opportunism.
Yeah.
American Christianity is the market equilibrium guided by the invisible hand of the God market. That's how he got there.
Wasn't this guy a fucking writer first? He's just bouncing all over the place and he's on page 2.
Okay, Noah, to be fair, his mom really was a drug addict and he only had to lie in the second half of that first book. So, you know, this one, he's all tightrope, you know? It's tough.
No, that's fair. Yeah, but he says he used to want to rise above others, but since he met Trump, he's more of a bottom, I guess.
And that's how I got my job. We're all power bottoms to Christ. It's true.
There's also this sad fucking moment where he's like, you know, I've accomplished pretty much all the stuff that you can accomplish. And I'm like, dude, you're the vice president. Right? Like, even if it wasn't too a fascist, that's a joke fucking job. There's been one TV show ever about a vice president, and it was about how nobody would want that fucking job.
I made it to the brass ring. Well, there's a shittier ring right below the brass ring. I'm right there.
Yeah. And then, of course, our first encounter with scripture comes on page 3. Matthew talking about how ye shall know them by their fruits. And he quotes the whole passage, which is so repetitive. Dr. Seuss would tell Matthew to get to the fucking point.
Yeah. It's like God was trying to explain something to Matthew and God got flustered. And he's like, OK, so good trees, good fruit. Wait, that. OK, stupid. Bad tree. No. OK, Matt. You know, fucking trees, right?
You're writing all this down? It is.
Also, can I say, Poe Buddy's Nerfect is a weird follow-up when your last sentence was, I have achieved all of my dreams.
Right.
But, you know, nobody's perfect.
He goes, but, you know, the reason that I turned back to Christianity is because Christians just kept turning out to be better people than everybody else. And I'm like, you're married to a Hindu lady, dude. Stop.
Okay. I met her when I was a dirty atheist. Come on. Exact quote from the subtext of this book.
Oh, yeah, right. No, this part has a very, like, what's it going to take to get you into this religion feel to it, too?
Yeah, just slapping the hood of the Bible. She's a beaut, am I right?
Right.
Come on. Lot of rape in
lot
this.
Of torque.
Then he quotes himself, right? So the first quote is scripture. Second quote is J.D. fucking Vance.
A great man once said.
Yeah. Right. Well, so he quotes the thing that he said that got all the Christians all pissed off at him because he was asked about why he became a Christian and he didn't talk about Jesus enough.
Yeah.
Right. And the quote is basically, he's like, you know, look, I looked at all the societal benefits of the different religions and Christianity says no brainer. Duh. And then Christians got mad because, of course, when you're asked, why did you pick that religion? You're supposed to pretend like the answer is, oh, that one was true.
Yeah. He just wrote about his capitalist path to Christ. And then he stops here to re-adjudicate a Twitter fight about it that he had with these Christians. And to be clear, nobody wins the scripted fight that he wrote in his own book.
Everybody agrees to disagree with himself.
Bad. Yeah, they all look bad. Christian people were like, hey, fucking do the lie. Do the, you're fucking up our thing. You're supposed to lie there. And speaking of which, the book we're reading right now, he continues. Yeah, right. No?
He goes, I turned to Christianity because I saw so many Christians doing good things. And I'm like, yours is the kid rapiest of all the religions. Did you not also see that, man?
No, I didn't see that because Donald never invited me to the island. So...
He goes like, you know, my mom and dad took in drug addicts when the hospital turned them away. And I'm like, oh, what do they do for the people who are turned away who needed abortions?
No questions, please. Hands down. No questions.
Yeah.
Anyway, we're cutting Medicare and Medicaid to give tax cuts to billionaires. Mm-hmm. More opportunities for the sector of Christian detox couches, right?
Yeah, so there you go.
It's a growth sector, am I right? Am I right?
It always has couches? Been for me.
I fucked a couch.
And then he goes into this bit, like, you know, back when he was a dirty atheist, he's like, you know, when, but then I had kids and I realized that I was a bad person. And I'm like, oh, man, I could have told you that.
Also, you should have some more kids. I don't think you understand how bad
clearly
a person
you didn't have
you
enough. No, he was, quote, so focused on winning the game of life that I had neglected the deeper truths, end quote.
Just want to remind everybody that Rupert Murdoch recently compared him as meh to Marco Rubio.
Yep. Exactly.
Also, just to remind you, you're both wearing clown shoes from Florsheim right now because of the shallow truth of your penises. That's what actually happened.
But like this whole thing is so fucking sickly. He's like, boy, what I learned is that I sure do love the simple salt of the earth white people. First and foremost, the ones in Iowa. Why? And then secondly, the ones in South Carolina, I think.
Maine. One second. I'm going down a list on Wikipedia as I write this.
Marco Rubio's a Cuban. Wait, no, I mean... Michigan.
New Hampshire. Yeah. He's like, you know, I realized that the people that I used to deride as simpletons, you know, the ones who didn't go to Ivy League colleges or accomplish anything, but still voted a pretty high percentage if they're scared enough of gay people, were actually the best of the people.
Yeah. I can't help but notice you didn't hire any of them for your venture capital firm.
It's so weird. I guess he realized this after
earning enough salt.
And then he tells us about an email that a friend sent us so that, you know, he could pad the word count with somebody else's email. And basically he's like, hey, you know, a Christian guy told me on pretty good authority that all I need is a mustard seed's worth of faith and that counts. And that I actually have.
Look, I know that this book is going to be a barely disguised call for the theocracy Vance wants to establish, but I will not stand for him encouraging annoying Christian cousins to send their you should try Jesus emails, okay?
Right.
Too far.
I'm about to get a copy of this book from my born again cousin with like
you sure are,
annotated post-its. If that's a bet on Kalshi, y'all should take it.
Take it in. Oh, absolutely.
He goes, I know that no non-Christians are going to be convinced by my testimony in this book, but that's okay because unless they're making fun of it on a podcast or something, they're not going to read it anyway.
Yeah.
Also, the whole point of this book is to say, like, you know, I'm just like you, rubes. So that's the only thing I need to convince anybody of.
Oh, these? Yeah, no, these are my shoes. They're a 13. They're from Florsheim. No big deal. Marcos are 11.5. Anyway, path to God.
Yeah, he says this book is, quote, one man's story, no more, no less. And I'm like, well, less.
Yeah, don't worry. If he forgets anything, we'll fill in the gaps. I feel like he's going to forget a few
there
things.
You go.
Remember when he couldn't hold a trophy? He couldn't.
I do.
He was
I do remember
half
that.
A second into trying to touch a trophy, and it basically exploded.
It did. He goes, quote, I'm not a particularly sectarian person, end quote. And I'm like, regardless of what my words and actions and desires might suggest.
Yeah, and how history books will define my effect historically.
Yeah, right. He goes, I'm a Catholic, but don't worry, Protestants, I'm one of the good Catholics. He actually spends a little time on the, now I know you might think Catholics are heathens question.
Yeah, I know my base is an incongruent mix of the mentally ill and mutually exclusive religions, but I think we can all agree you guys would vote for me for president next year, right?
Yeah.
You guys don't think I'm meh compared to Marco. You would probably not say meh as your answer, right?
You guys would be as excited about me as you would be for Trump. You'd be like
13 to 11.5.
Vance!
When we both lied.
You can make a statue of me. I don't care.
He's got this moment where he's like, you know, he's got to kind of acknowledge how weird it was for God to split the one true religion into a bunch of mutually exclusive denominations. And his explanation for this is like, weird, right? Anywho.
But no, I love Protestants too. Y'all had that. You had that plucky little Reformation thing. I mean, changing God's words. But I love that. For you, it's an ingenuity or something, right?
He says, quote, "One of the things I admire about my own church is that fundamental questions of doctrine change very rarely," end quote. And I'm like, yeah, no, fuck all this post-fifth century thinking that's plaguing the rest of the world.
I'm not one of these guys that's down with this Nicene wokeness.
Also, I should say, Pope's fucking love me. I'm killing it at the Vatican, just so everybody knows. Killing it.
He goes, he says, he's like, "I said Protestants are good at music. That's actually a compliment. I said I like their music.
I like it. They're also eloquent speakers in tongues. Lots of good stuff going on."
Yeah. Oh, here's a good lie. He says, quote, "Besides the amazing music, I promise," and he's talking about if you go to Protestant churches, he says, "I promise you'll find people who invite you to coffee or to their house for a meal," end quote. And I added, "unless you're gay or look different for them or are brown or have a Hindu wife," actually, now that we're talking about it.
Okay, this is amazing. This is J.D. Vance being like, yeah, so nobody invites me for coffee ever. I like them. But that's a Catholic thing specifically. I think Protestants, that's why. It's because it's Catholicism.
Right.
It's just taboo.
Also, JD, who fucking cares, man? If you think I'm going to burn in hell, but you invite me to your house for fucking cookies with jam in the center, all that makes you is an evil liar, right?
Yeah.
Just a liar.
I'll take the cookies.
Yeah. He goes, look, whether you're a Protestant or a Catholic, I think we can all agree that the real enemy is those damn Muslims and atheists, right?
Sorry, no, then, you're on your own for the end of the chapter. Heath and I are having a silent, our jam cookies good fight.
Okay, that's good. I'm on the last paragraph anyway.
You are. You're so close.
Yep. And that's as deep between Vance's cushions as we're willing to look tonight, but we're going to dig even further on the next installment of...
You're not eating jam cookies?
I'm not eating
They're
jam.
So fucking they're, good.
They're awful. What if I'm alone?
It's the best way to put fruit into a cookie.
Or not. It doesn't matter. I'll eat cookies with no jam and then spoonfuls of jam or together or whatever.
That's it's why would great. You not want
they're
those?
Awful.
Yeah.
I hate them.
Or no spoon involved. It doesn't. It's all great.
Before we put the milk back in the fridge tonight, I wanted to remind you that it's almost too late to get tickets to see us live in D.C., but not quite. We're recording an episode of God Awful Movies Live on August 14th. Tickets are still available at godawfulmovieslive.com unless you want premium tickets, in which case you should have acted sooner. Check the show notes for a link. Anyway, that's all the blasphemy we've got for you tonight, but we'll be back in 10,022 minutes with more. If you can't wait that long, be on the lookout for a brand new episode of our sister show, The Skeptocrat, debuting at 7 a.m. Eastern on Monday, an even newer episode of our sister show's Hot Friend, God Awful Movies, debuting at 7 Eastern on Tuesday, and an even newer episode of our half-sister show, Citation Needed, debuting at noon Eastern on Wednesday. Obviously, I can't close it out until I thank Heath Enright for being my rock, Eli Bosnick for being my scissors, and Lucinda Lusions for being my hammer. That could absolutely take out both the rock and the fucking scissors if she wanted to, but she doesn't want to. And apologies for the lack of a Farnsworth quote on today's show. We're making a few changes to accommodate the shift to video. Farnsworth quotes might be back. It might be elsewhere in the show. Might be video. We're still sorting all of that out. So apologies if you've got one waiting in the queue. But most of all, of course, I want to thank this week's and last week's best people. Jim, Nigel, Sean, Melissa, Nakoto, Keaton, Roanuk, William, Rebecca, Carnifax, Thrain, Sack, Jalderon, Tyler, Genan, Niathan, James, Kelsey, Aaron, and sounds like Eli upped his Patreon pledge, whose hearts are so big cholesterol doesn't even bother. Together, these 18 amiable atheists aided in our aims to alienate Abrahamic ace-holery this week by giving us money. Not everybody has the money it takes to give some to us, but if you'd like to do so, you can make a per-episode donation at patreon.com/scathingatheist, whereby you earn early access to an extended ad-free version of every episode, or you can make a one-time donation by clicking on the donate button on the right side of the homepage at scathingatheist.com. And if you'd like to help, but not if there's money involved, you can also help a ton by leaving a five-star review, telling a friend about the show, and following us on social media. And speaking of social media, Tim Robertson and Lily Bosnick handle that for us. Our cartoonist is Angelo Madrid from Madrid Toons. That's right. If you haven't checked out the YouTube version, you're missing little Angelo animations between bits. And our audio engineer is Morgan Clark, who also wrote all the music that was used in this episode, which was used with permission. If you have questions, comments, or death threats, you'll find all the contact info on the contact page at scathealias.com.
Morgan, did you see I fixed my mic all by myself?